Welcome to another episode of COVID Chronicles, a podcast by, for, and about people affiliated with Portland Mennonite Church in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum, and my guest is Tom Howard. Welcome, Tom. It's wonderful to have you with me. So, Tom, I know you a little bit, but there's a lot I don't know. And first off, I have no idea where you were born or where you started out in life. Can you tell us that, please?
Yes, I was born here in Portland, even though I grew up out in Columbia County in a very rural area. They rushed my mother to Portland to deliver me.
Was she having issues? Do you know what the story is?
Yes, the story is rather interesting. My father was at work, and my mother was waxing the floors. And she went into labor. And at that time, we had a little community bus that went around and took people around. And so she called immediately, and the bus driver came and took her by herself, nobody else on the bus, and drove her to Portland to the hospital with her going into labor. And I was born at Good Samaritan.
How many siblings do you have, and where do you fit in the family?
I'm the youngest. I have a brother, James, that lives in Kansas, and there were just two of us. My parents, it's kind of interesting. My father was, during World War II, he was one of General MacArthur's staff. He was a decoder, and he was stationed in Brisbane, Australia. And my mother was a waitress in a restaurant across the street from General MacArthur's Pacific headquarters. And she was Australian, and that's how they met. So my brother was born in Australia, but I was born here.
I had no idea. That's amazing. Do you have any stories? Was your father ever able to tell you anything at all about what he was doing?
Yeah. As I said, he was a decoder, and he worked in General MacArthur's office. And my brother was the first baby born to General MacArthur's staff. And General MacArthur loved children. And my mother, not being an American, wasn't allowed in the building, but she would bring my brother over to the building there and wait outside. And my father would come down and get my brother and take him upstairs for General MacArthur to play with him in his office. And when MacArthur shipped out to the Philippines, my father went with him to the Dutch East Indies and the Philippines, then back to the United States. And then 3 years later, my mother and my brother came here on a ship, a Matson Line ship, that had been requisitioned to bring war brides to the United States from the Pacific. So that's the story, and that's how I came to be.
So was your father originally from Oregon, or how did they happen to end up here in Oregon?
My father's family actually were from Maine and Pennsylvania. His mother's family were from Lancaster, from Conestoga, and they came out in the wagon train of 1852 and settled here in Oregon. Actually, his family originally settled down near Zion Church in that area, and then later moved north to what's now Columbia County. That's where it all began. They were farmers. And I have actually a very strong Mennonite heritage on my father's side of the family.
But I'm guessing since he was in the military, maybe he was attending or his family was with another denomination at that point?
Yes, there were no other Mennonites in the area at that time. And they were raised in a religious household. They attended the Methodist Church or the Baptist Church. They were very kind of loose about that. But I knew from very early on about my Mennonite heritage. The family kept very good records. My grandmother, my great aunt passed on to me through my father volumes of family history. And Hans Herr is my sixth great-grandfather.
That's pretty much a Mennonite heritage right there.
Not to be a name dropper.
Hans Herr, most people have heard of that name. That's amazing. So was church an important part of your life as you were growing up?
Now, my mother's family were Catholic. So the story goes, at that time in the Catholic Church, if you had a mixed marriage, you had to promise that the children would be raised Catholic. So I was raised Catholic and actually had planned to enter the seminary.
For the priesthood?
Yes. Actually, I was going to enter the Cistercian Abbey at Lafayette as a monk. And the summer that I was to begin my postulancy, for personal reasons, I left the Catholic Church and began to wander. I was a child of the 60s and 70s and captivated by Oriental religion and all of that.
You went to public school, I'm assuming, through elementary and high school?
No, I went to parochial school.
Where was that? What was the name of it?
St. Frederick's in St. Helens. That was the local church there and school. And then I went to public high school and kind of bummed around. And after my father died, my mother wanted to return home. And my father had passed away. And so I went with her and my brother, and we returned to Australia.
How old were you when your father died?
16.
So you finished out high school here.
And then when in my early 20s, when I was 23, I went with my mother and my brother, and we returned to Australia. And I began training at the Royal Brisbane Hospital for nursing school. I stayed in Australia for a year, but it was really hard on my mother because she had been away for so long, and she had a huge family. She was one of 15 children. And so ultimately, I mean, my roots were here in Oregon, and so I returned to the States. She did too.
At that same time?
Yes, and then my brother also did. I stayed for a little over a year in Australia.
So during that year in Australia, did you get to meet relatives that you hadn't met before? Or what was that like for you to just be that close to family?
It was truly amazing because my mother kept in touch with her sisters and brothers, and I grew up with cards for my birthday from my grandmother and little boxes of cookies and tea and stuff like that. It was really interesting to actually meet them face to face. And my first day there, I had absolutely no idea what anybody was saying. I might as well have been hearing German. You know, in fact, if I heard German, I would have understood it better. It was pretty comical. And just to meet everybody. And Christmas there was totally amazing because the whole family came together and met out at the old home place out near Tawapak. And my Aunt Aggie hosted Christmas, and we had this huge, huge Christmas celebration. They knew that we were used to Christmas trees, and Christmas trees are rare in that climate. I mean, at Christmas time there, it's bonfires and barbecues. And so they had taken a branch off of a tree and then decorated it, especially for the occasion. It was really absolutely fascinating to see all my aunts together cooking a huge Christmas dinner on a combustion range. And I don't know if you know what a combustion range is, but it's a combination wood and oil kind of thing. And it's hotter than blazes at Christmas time there. And they're cooking this huge Christmas dinner on this essentially wood stove. And it was a pretty amazing experience.
So would that Christmas dinner have been something similar, at least the food, to what you would have eaten here?
In some ways, it was roast chuck, which is roast chicken, and pickled pork, which is like a ham that's boiled rather than baked. Plum pudding, of course. It was similar in some ways, but also more British. My mother's family, actually, her father was German, and her mother was Scotch and Irish. So some of that is carried over and reflected in my own diet, too. So my own diet consists of combinations of German and Irish foods growing up. My dad's family still hung on to a lot of the old Pennsylvania Dutch traditions.
So when you went back there for that year, was that the first time that you had been to Australia, or had your family made some trips there before your father died?
My mother went back for 6 months in 58 to visit her sisters and brothers. And again, you know, it was really hard for her to go back. At that time, and even when I was there, it was a very different place than here. For instance, when I lived there, air conditioning was rare except in big modern office buildings. People didn't have air conditioning in their homes generally. Electrical appliances were expensive. And my mother lived with me. When I went to work at the Royal Brisbane, I rented an apartment nearby. And it was actually one of the nicest apartments I've ever lived in. And it was dirt cheap. And I took my mother to live with me. And she would do my laundry and the cooking and stuff. Doing the laundry was done, and that was in the early 70s, in a copper boiler. And I don't know if you know what that's like, but this big copper tub that you fill with water and you light the pilot light and the gas and you stir the laundry with a big stick. And nobody had dryers. You don't need them there, I mean, because of the sun. So you just hang the laundry out on the clotheslines to dry. So I think my mother sort of forgot, or she had all of these dreams of going back and it was going to be a wonderful experience, but she forgot how many differences there were at that time. Of course, now it's changed amazingly. I mean, now it's no different from here, but at that time it was.
You said it was the early 70s when you were back for that year?
Yes.
Which part of Australia is this? North, south, east, west? Can you just give us a little sense?
Northeast, it's on the Pacific Ocean side. The city of Brisbane is an extremely beautiful city. I miss it sometimes, and I often go to YouTube and Google it, and it's a huge city. When I lived there, it was three times bigger than Portland. It's a port city. It's on a large river like the Willamette. It's closer to the ocean, however, and so it's a very beautiful city. It truly is.
Let's get back to your life story. So you returned back to Oregon, and what came next for you? More schooling? You needed to start making a living at some point, I trust. What happened?
Yeah, I continued my education at Portland State. I studied art at Portland State, and I worked at Good Samaritan for over 10 years as a nursing assistant there while I was going to school. I also worked at OHSU and went on to study art and art history. I gave up on a vocation to the priesthood long before that. However, I did become a disciple of a Zen teacher here in Portland. And I studied Zen Buddhism for 12 years during that time. And in 99, I received ordination and went to Japan and went to all of the lineage temples, spent time in all of the lineage temples and monasteries of the Soto Zen lineage that I had been ordained into. In 2004, I became assistant to the abbot here and became what's called Shuso, or Chief Junior, which roughly corresponds to what we might call an archdeacon. I was in charge of the training of further students. And then in 2004, I underwent what was called Shuso Hasen, which is a very important time for ordination in the Zen Buddhist tradition. Teachers come from various other temples, some of them not even aligned with my particular tradition. And I present a verse, and it's quite a grand ceremony. And then I do what's called Dharma combat with these other teachers from other traditions that grill you. And it's roughly, I suppose, like a bar mitzvah. Then when you pass, you're given the opportunity to go on to full ordination. I chose not to, because throughout all of that time, Jesus was always an important figure in my life. And while there's a lot to commend in Buddhism, and I have wonderful memories, I still have Buddhist friends, and I still stay connected to those people, there's a strong emphasis on emptiness and embracing emptiness. And I was never able to fully do that. You can't quite snuggle up to emptiness in the same way you can snuggle up to Jesus when things get tough. So back to earlier when we talked about my childhood and knowing about my Mennonite heritage, I decided, you know, I spent all of these years wandering around. I spent all of my childhood trying to be a good Catholic boy. And but I never really explored my father's family tradition. And I worked with Mennonites. I worked with Mary Gingrich and Lee, and I knew people from our church years ago. And I decided one Sunday, I said to Mark, I said, Mark, I'm going to church. I'm going to the Mennonite church. That's always been in my bucket list to do. You know? So I showed up at PMC and haven't left since then. You know, and it was truly like coming home. It really, really was. And I don't know whether we carry things in our DNA that make us feel those feelings. But for me, that was really an experience for me. It was like, this is somehow familiar. This is, yes, this is what I really believe. And this is what I always questioned. And this is what I was looking for. And I have to say, as corny as this may sound, that at that time, I'd been working on a lot of family genealogy and going through all of that stuff that had been passed on to me. And I had the most amazing dream one night that I was standing at the gate of a cemetery, and my ancestors started reaching out to me. They started as if rising from those graves and reaching out. And it wasn't a scary situation. It wasn't a scary dream at all. It was quite profound. And when I woke up, I decided that I'm being called to baptism. And the rest is history, as you know. You were there. And so that's how I ended up being baptized and coming to the Mennonite church and realizing that, yeah, this is my tribe. These are my people.
What year was it that you first came to Portland Mennonite?
Let's see here. It would be 4 years ago. So 2016.
And did you feel or sense or whatever term you want to use, this belonging, like, was it instant? Give me a little sense of what that first Sunday was like for you. What was it specifically, if you can say?
Yeah, I was a little afraid at first about acceptance by the community. And then I experienced such friendliness from everybody. Everybody introducing themselves, Rod coming down and introducing himself. Such warmth. And when it came time for communion, I thought, I haven't had communion in years, in years and years and years. And I wanted to go up, and TK had kind of befriended me. And I said to him, well, do I go up for communion too? And he said, are you a Christian? And I had to say yes. You know, even though I had wandered all of those years, I knew what I was looking for. I don't know if that answers your question, but it was kind of this feeling that I belonged and this is where I needed to be.
I love that story. And we don't have a whole lot of time, but I know that one of the things that you are passionate about is writing icons. And if people could see the screen behind you, they would see some of your amazing work. Can you just, in a few minutes, tell me, you already said that you were interested in art. Where did this whole idea of icons come from? How did you get started doing that work?
Well, Catholics used icons too. So icons were always present in my life. There was an icon in the little church that we attended that I was always drawn to. And sometimes, even as a child, I would try to copy it. And back in, it would have been, I'm thinking, 86, I had a chance to study at Mount Angel, to study iconography with a master iconographer. So that's how that came about. It's just something that I've always loved doing, and I love being able to express our faith through art. They are, after all, the scripture in line and color. So even when I was a Buddhist, my Buddhist teacher would encourage me to continue painting icons.
That was one of my questions. Did you continue to do that throughout?
I did. And in fact, I also did some Buddhist painting as well and learned to paint tonkas. I studied with a Tibetan painter who are still very, very close, a wonderful gentleman. He's 88 years old, and I go see him, and he encourages me to continue to paint Christian icons. I think he recognizes that I'm where I need to be, that I have found where I belong. And in Buddhism, the journey is extremely important, and he knows that this is where I need to be.
Do you have a favorite? I don't know if that's a good question to ask or not.
I do. My favorite is The Hospitality of Abraham, and I'm working on a very large one. It depicts the three angels visiting Abraham and Sarah at the Oak of Mamre, Genesis 18. And I'm working on a very large one that's very unusual because it's done in a traditional Tibetan Buddhist technique, but it's Christian. It's done on cloth, and I'm busy working on mounting it into its silk brocade. If I can turn just slightly, you can see behind me a large brocade banner.
Yes.
It's like that, only much, much bigger.
What's your media?
I work in gouache and acrylic on cloth, The big panels you see behind me are done on wood. So I work in a variety of media, but I also, like I say, paint on cloth as well. I hope to have the one I'm currently working on finished soon and in time for when we're able to go back to our meeting house, and I will bring it some Sunday, because that's one of the ways you sanctify an icon, is by presenting it before the church.
So it sounds like the pandemic might have been the perfect time for you to have such a big project to work on.
That's exactly right. I'm finishing up all of these things. And lastly, I'd like to say that my muse is my spouse, Mark, my husband, Mark, and that we've been together for 39 years. And he has been a champion of my art and my path all of these years. So.
Perfect. Obviously, a half hour goes by very quickly, but I'd like to just thank you, Tom, so much for giving us this glimpse into your life.
Well, you're quite welcome, and I'm happy to share it. I think I've been truly blessed in life. My life has been an adventure, and I cannot believe that in 2 months I'll be 70.
Well, thanks again. And thank you for joining us for this episode of COVID Chronicles. If something you heard raised questions or you discovered a connection, take the opportunity to reach out and continue the conversation. I'm your host, Gloria Nussbaum. Until next time, stay well and keep the faith.